Conciliums
with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this.
We're recording. There's like five of us in the library right now, and then security.
Why are there only five of you in the library? Could I go check out a book if I want?
Yes.
Oh, so there's people at the circulation desk.
Yeah, and that's what I think make up the five.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
Because our library is now open 24/7, except for
24/5.
24/5.
Sunday at noon until Friday at 6, and then open Saturday 9 to 6 or 8 to 6, 9 to 6.
Okay, so it closes early
Friday nights and Saturday nights.
Oh, okay, so Friday night and Saturday, because you're right. The odds are lower that people will be there.
And then we
but
open
then
a little bit late on Sunday.
24 hours a day.
Yeah, it just rolls and rolls.
Is that a good system? Is that a good way to do things?
There's a ton of kids in
what
the
are the
library
kids doing
the
in the library? I'm just curious.
Well, if today is any indicator, they seem to be doing graffiti in the bathrooms a lot.
Is that a creative outlet for Georgia Tech students? Graffiti in the bathroom. Graffiti in the bathroom.
I have been feeling unhealthy after the break, right? Because I haven't been working out and I've been eating a lot of food.
I have not been running. Yeah. I'm a pig. I need to drop 15 pounds.
Yeah, yeah. So I ate, I think, 5 pounds of mashed potatoes at one point. So I've been drinking a lot of water today, which means that I've been taking a leak a lot today. Right?
So you've been in the can a lot.
I've been in the can. And
I hear you. I've been there.
Just to make it sort of interesting, I've been going to different bathrooms throughout the library.
Okay, Charlie Bennett, who likes to add diversity to his bathroom habits by going to different bathrooms. Why do you do that?
It's a really boring day if you just go and pee in the same toilet, you know, every 45 minutes.
But you, being a true Renaissance man, decided to do different bathrooms in the library. We're not recording this yet, are we?
Yeah, totally.
This is a good way to start.
If you're going to make fun of my urination improvisations, I don't think I want to be part of this show.
No, I'm not making fun of it. I think it's spectacular. I really do. But that just shows you how boring we are. Do people with real life, does Kanye West go to the can in a different toilet just because he wants the variety? I don't think so. I think
he probably asks for it to be painted a different color or painted with gold. I just was reading about Kanye West earlier because of the baby thing.
Yeah, what's the deal with that? She's not even divorced from the other guy.
We're totally dating this podcast right away, but I did just find out today that Kanye West and Kim Kardashian are pregnant.
Well, she's pregnant. Obviously, he had something to do with
it. Well, you know, it's public square, so he's locked in. He's going to have to follow through on this.
Really?
Don't you think?
Well, he's got enough money that he could just, you know.
He has a ton of money.
Support the.
It turns out, I was reading this article, and the amount of work he did production-wise before he was ever a performer is amazing. Like, people were trying to get his stuff to rap over long before people even knew his name, you know, like the public.
Yeah.
He's got a ton of money.
Well, I think he's a talented individual. I really do. And I think
kind of boorish, though. And
because he said
overblown.
George W. Bush doesn't like black people?
I don't think that's boorish. I think that the whole grabbing the microphone out of somebody's hand at an awards ceremony and interrupting to say...
But he was drunk. What was he drinking? Cavassier?
I got nothing. All I know is the I'ma let you finish internet meme that was created out of that moment when he snatched the mic out of Taylor Swift's hands to say that... Your award is not legitimate. These are not the words he used.
He implied it. He was not that strong.
Your award is not legitimate. The better album was done by one of my compatriots.
And who was
compatriots.
It?
Did he produce it?
No, but who was he referring to? It was.
I have no idea.
It was someone I should know. This is how bad we are.
But didn't he produce the album? Isn't that why he was yelling?
I don't know. Okay. But the album he referred to is a good album. And Taylor Swift, let's be honest about Taylor Swift.
Do we have to be anything about Taylor Swift?
No, I had this conversation at lunch with some of my colleagues in the School of Chemical and Biomolecular Engineering that, you know, you
are
should
you trying
do,
to toss out a bona fide before we get too
there
deep
I am.
Into the pop culture?
No, and even geeky professors at lunch think about this stuff, that you should do what you want. You should like what you want. You should listen to what you want.
That's true.
And one of my colleagues and I... We were discussing how do you get people interested in science and engineering, and we came to the conclusion that some people just don't like that, and that's okay.
This is what you do
I'm waiting for the Prozac to kick in.
The thing you want is for people to care more about science and engineering.
It is.
Is this the thing that defines your creative life, Pete?
It is the niche that I have chosen to pursue. And that is the correct pronunciation of niche, isn't it? Is it niche? Is it not a French word?
Which came first?
Niche or niche?
The recognition of the egg or the recognition of the niche. I feel like I'm syllabating.
I feel like you're
place.
Drunk, actually, much like Kanye West.
Which came first, recognizing the niche or feeling like you had to find something to get in? And did you find the pond first or did you realize you were a big fish first?
I have never been a big fish, even though I need to drop about 15 pounds after the
holidays. If you can find a small pond, man, you can be a big fish.
This all happened by accident.
It's all about the size is where you put your eyes. It's about the size.
I went into chemical engineering because I liked chemistry and because I realized chemical engineers got paid more than chemists. It's not really fair, by the way, for all my chemists listening. But I think it has something to do with your willingness to spend a week on an offshore oil platform and how good you look in a hard hat.
Did you spend a week on an offshore
oil? No, I have not done that.
Well, what the
but
hell
I have students
then?
That
why
do
are you
do
making
that?
The money? If you haven't been on the platform, why are you making the bigger bucks?
That's a good question. But if you look at salary rates.
I'm going to have to take some of this paper because we got a bunch of irons in the fire already.
So you're trying to.
I'm going to try and do this semi-professionally.
You're trying to chart some threads. Is that what you would do?
Don't mix your metaphors, man.
Have I mixed a metaphor for that? No, that was not even a metaphor. Because a thread describes a conversation.
There's no thread here.
We're threadless. In science terms, we would be called a non-woven.
What's interesting is that woven is an acronym.
It is?
For the communication methods taught in the College of Literature, Media, and Culture's writing program.
Well, now you're talking crazy talk here.
Written, oral, verbal, electronic, and
nasty.
Nonverbal.
And now nonverbal refers to carnal knowledge.
Wait a minute, that can't be right.
Nonverbal?
Right? Because oral and verbal are the same, aren't they?
Written, oral, verbal, erotic. Now, what's the E?
Nasty. Electronic.
Electronic.
Written is right and electronic is right. Woven. Wow. I am drunk.
Actually, disclaimer, ladies and gentlemen, he's completely sober. He's just this weird.
What the hell are we talking about? You're interested in chemistry.
I was making a bad science joke.
Yeah.
Fabric sheet that's not the result of woven threads or fibers.
Don't do it. Don't do it, Pete.
They call it a non-woven.
Oh. Chemistry, Kanye West. Mm-hmm. We'll drop the whole Kardashian baby thing because the apocalypse didn't happen. So we're all right.
But look, if they're in love and this is what's good, you know, people should do what they want to do. And the conversation we had at lunch is that
people should do what they want.
Some people don't like science and engineering. That's good. Just like my colleague said, well, Pete, you probably don't like ballet. Actually, I like ballet.
And poetry, right?
But I don't like opera. I do like poetry.
You don't like opera?
Maybe
that's
what
the O is for.
And another one of my colleagues,
written, operatic,
she and her husband, they like
verbal, electronic,
they like opera.
And nonverbal.
So if you like opera, and she made a point that one of my colleagues said he didn't like it because the staging is kind of weird. And she pointed out a lot of modern stagings of operas are much more simple and very interesting. So I'll have to look into that.
One of my favorite opera stories, two friends of mine went to an opera in Austria, and they're American citizens who speak English and a little bit of French.
Okay.
But they thought
Austria, where they speak German.
Yeah. And these folks who went to see the opera in Austria, they knew they didn't speak German and that they would not understand. But since there were always subtitles at every opera.
Yeah, that's a modern thing. And they do that in the United States.
In the United States where people don't speak English. So
where
they
people
assumed,
are crass.
They assumed that they would be able to read the subtitles of the performance as they always had in America. And then they got there and discovered that, no, that's not how it works. So they were watching this German opera and they were enjoying it, even though they felt a little bit lost, and all these things were happening, and they told me about this scene where the man and woman are singing to each other, and they're trying to read the cues, the staging cues, like you're talking about. They were listening to the music and watching the way that people move together. And they were thinking, oh, this is the lovers. This is the lovers scene where they're talking about how much they love each other. And then we're going to have to deal with them for the rest. And then somebody pulls out a gun and shoots the other one.
Okay.
And they were the only two people in the theater that went, because probably the song translated was saying, and now I'm going
about
to shoot
to
you.
Papa
Cap. Now you must die. Yeah. I am so sad that you must die, but now I will kill you because that is what I must do. Right.
Right.
That's my favorite opera story. I just like the idea of these two Americans in the middle of an opera going, when someone got shot, even though it had been explained but 10 minutes before.
I guess the point is that you should like what you like, but the reason we need to inform people and get them engaged in an understanding of science and technology is, one, we need a lot of scientists and engineers. So you might be interested in it, but you may not know enough about it to think you're interested in it. So that will help engage the next generation of scientists and engineers. But the other reason is the average person should know about science and engineering because it's really important in your everyday life.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about. When you say that it's okay that some people don't like chemistry or don't like engineering, and that's fine. People should like what they like. When you say that, aren't you in a way saying that people don't have to be well-rounded?
No, I'm saying they don't have to be passionate about it, but they need to have a basic understanding of science, engineering, business, economics, culture.
Right.
So that they can interact with people in a reasonable fashion and, more importantly, be an informed electorate.
Wouldn't you say that it's a mistake then to use the construction of liking something or not liking? Isn't it that people need to know enough to get through their day in business, in science?
Even if it's something that they don't like.
Even if they don't like. And so we wouldn't say, oh, they don't like driving.
Yeah.
So they'll just use the car, but they don't really like driving, so they're not going to know anything about it, right? That's kind of a...
Where are you going with this?
I'm going with the pre-assumption. The pre-assumption, man. I can't even talk.
Is that even a word? Is that a concept?
I think I might have taken some drugs without knowing it.
You've been roofied before the podcast.
The assumption. Where's my drink test kit?
When you pass out, God only knows what I'm going to do to you.
This is my greatest fear, being passed out in a control room with you.
You are a handsome man. What can I say?
So, Pete, stop looking in the mirror. So, if you say that it's okay for people to not like science and engineering, you're giving them an out. Science and math, engineering, these are all things that we should know a little bit about.
Yeah.
Right? And to say that it's okay for them not to like it, aren't you just perpetuating the problem that it's not something like someone who can't balance their checkbook because they didn't like math in school? I think that's a problem. You just said an informed
electorate.
You are
not allowed to be that ignorant of math.
Right. And you shouldn't be that ignorant of at least, I don't know, scientific method maybe?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying you don't have to be passionate about it. And let me compare and contrast myself with my colleague, Chris Jones, who was one of the colleagues I was talking to, who, by the way, doesn't like opera either. He is brilliant and insightful at understanding how catalysts work. And catalysts are things that make chemical reactions go faster and produce more material, right? So you get a greater extent of reaction. He's brilliant at that.
Isn't one of the fundamental misunderstandings of catalysts that a catalyst is not something that needs to be present for a reaction to take place? It just speeds it up?
Well, yeah, but it has to be there. It's actually involved in the reaction, It has to be present, and it, you know, it's
so
like,
I'm the one who doesn't understand.
Well, yeah, but a good way to describe that is like facilitators and mavens from the book The Tipping Point, that these are things that sort of help the deal go. So say you're doing a business deal. Someone can be a catalyst for a business deal, and usually that's the guy that drinks a lot and tells
– That's a money man.
Just the right joke to get people going. That guy's a catalyst. So the point is you can use the phrase catalyst in a context of business, social interaction. The biological version of it is an enzyme, right? Everybody knows enzymes are important, and that is the biological version of a catalyst. They work a little bit different than the ones we use in the chemical industry. But I digress. Chris is brilliant at catalysts, but he hates opera. But he loves driving, right? Me, I use a car to get from point A to point B.
Do you know how a car works?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to quiz you because I don't know how it works either.
I used to know more. And in fact, one of the examples, and we're really getting off into the second topic we're going to talk about today, but we might as well just go.
We'll just flip it. Flip it for real.
You know, how do you get people engaged in a discussion of science and technology? We were talking about this over lunch, and two of the folks that do a good job at this are Click and Clack, the guys from Car Talk, who are retiring. Are they officially retired yet?
By the time people hear this, probably.
They may well be. But in any case, they're engaging because they deal with something most people can relate to. And I take issue with that. I'm not sure that's necessarily true anymore. And they're just funny guys. And they laugh a lot and they make jokes. And they're pleasant
to listen
to. And
they're comfortable with each other and comfortable in their knowledge, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That's
and they're
important.
Comfortable admitting when they don't know something. And that's usually when they make a very good joke. So I like listening to them, even though I gave up repairing my car about 10 or 15 years ago. I used to have an oil filter wrench, and I used to have a socket set where I could change the spark plugs, and I could do some basic – I had a timing light for a while. I could do basic tune-up stuff.
I have no idea what a timing light is. You busted my knowledge of how car
works.
Well,
in the old days, the timing of the sparks firing was controlled by literally twisting this distributor cap. And a timing light was nothing but a strobe. So – you know, and you could change your oil filter and you could change your oil. And now it's so complicated, I don't do any of those things anymore.
I could still change an air filter if I had to.
Yes, air filters used to be these big ring-shaped things that, you know, went over your carburetor. Your engine doesn't have a carburetor anymore. It doesn't have a distributor. And I can't even change the – I do change my oil filter once in a while, or my air filter once in a while.
Yeah.
But now, to be honest, the first step I do in fixing a car, if something's going wrong, you either take it to a mechanic.
Or they hook it up to a computer.
Yes, and you can buy the little widget to plug in and hook it up to your computer.
Yeah.
So I don't own one, but a couple of my colleagues do.
Right.
And it, you know, code, you know, 14-7, and it's...
That means your oxygen sensor has burnt out.
Yeah, or your camshaft, you know, spin rate controller or something like that is not doing well.
Or your hamster got loose of the wheel.
Right. And the unicorn drive has failed.
On the tubes.
So here's a good point. The good point is that you should listen to Click and Clack because they're funny and they're entertaining. But by listening to the show, you understand enough about auto mechanics and the jargon to talk intelligently to your mechanic and at least have some reasonable expectation that you're not being totally ripped off.
Do you think that talking intelligently to your mechanic starts with saying, tell me in a way that I can understand?
Well, if you're someone that doesn't understand much about auto mechanics, yeah.
I'm assuming that we're people who don't understand much about auto mechanics. If I walk in there and I say to a guy, my car's making a funny noise.
Yeah.
And he says, well, is it a tapping or is it a jangle or is it a rattle?
And does it do it when you start, stop, when you're idling? He's already exercising the scientific method.
Absolutely. But I don't know what he means by those noise classifications.
Well, have him explain them to you.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. The first thing to do is to say, tell me what you mean by a tapping. Because there was a thing wrong with my car a little while ago, Honda Accord 98, and there was a sound. I swear to you, it sounded like somebody was pulling a rubber band back and then snapping it against the bottom of the car.
Okay,
it was only happening.
Well, that's very descriptive.
When I was braking,
very specific.
Well, yeah, it was very specific, and also made me think that I was going to have to buy a new car. Took it into the mechanics.
Did you have a rubber band stuck to the bottom of your car?
It was just something that was loose, that was snapping against the bottom of the car. Basically, that's what he's saying. Like, I diagnosed it in theory. I have no idea what the piece was, but he just tightened it up and didn't charge me anything. He was awesome.
But here's the deal. Will you go back to the mechanic?
Absolutely.
You bet your hiney you will.
I could not have explained to him anything about what it was that was wrong with the car. I could only say, this was my perception.
Right,
he did all the work of saying, "Oh yeah, let me put that on the lift." Yeah, that's your thing, yeah. the unicorn. The
so he formulated a hypothesis and he went to investigate that. And I think the people that do the best when they're dealing with an expert, whether it's your doctor or your auto mechanic
or your lawyer,
are the people that are either one, very knowledgeable, and let's face it, we can't be knowledgeable at everything, Right. There's no one that's knowledgeable at everything.
But if you understand how knowledge works, then you can at least see, oh, this is where I'm failing.
Yeah, so if you're not knowledgeable, but you understand basic logic and the scientific method, and you have no ego in the game.
Wow.
People
you
with
just
an ego have problems.
A different place.
No. And let's face it, my wife does very well with auto mechanics and repair people and things like that because she'll admit she doesn't understand details. And I have learned from my wife, honey, do you hear this? That, you know, there are some things I do understand. So I understand a little bit about mechanics, so I can talk to them at least reasonably intelligently. And if they go off into an area, you know, beyond the vacuum servo mechanism, which I never quite understood, then I just say, now explain to me what that is and why I care about that. But I'll never forget, I took my Ford Escort in one day to I think it was a Midas shop.
You still driving that?
No. That's the
long
transmission
time,
went
time
and
gone.
It's gone. No, it was a very reliable car. I liked the car. It did well. And I went in and he said, well, you're getting a light. And I said, well, what is the light set? It said, well, you've got a problem with your camshaft rotation speed sensor.
I understand all of those words except for cam.
Ah, so cam is real easy. Cam is a non-spherically shaped disc. Think of something like a kidney shape.
You're an asshole.
Why? Well, so I know what a cam is.
Non-spherically shaped disc.
Well, yeah, so the point is, if you have something that's spinning on a shaft,
oh,
and you have a
disc
on it.
It's like one of those kidney beans.
Yeah. So think of it like sort of kidney-shaped so that, you know, at one point it pushes down and then it pushes
then
up.
Then it lets back in.
And
so
the valves that allow, you know, gas and things to go into your combustion chamber, they are controlled by this cam, and the cam rotates very, very fast, and then it goes up and down and up and down. And that's how you can change all the valves in sequence. So I know that that's how my car worked, that this camshaft rotated. And, you know, this is modern cars have a sensor for everything.
Yeah, what was the piece again? A camshaft.
So it was a camshaft rotation speed sensor or something like
that. So the thing that was telling the car how fast the shaft the cam was attached to was spinning.
Yeah, it was telling you if it was not spinning at the right speed or it was spinning out of sync, right? And if anything's out of sync between the combustion and all these valves,
then everything's going to go down.
Then
hell.
Things knock. That's what knocking is, by the way. So in any case, so I knew what he said, and I thought for a minute, and I said, does a Ford Escort really need a camshaft speed sensor? And he looked around for a bit, and he goes, not really. That was a little bit of over-engineering. The mechanic was honestly sharing with me that maybe you don't need that. And actually, this is the kind of things you learn from Click and Clack.
Because the light would tell you that the cam was going at a wrong speed, right?
I don't even know. All it did is you get the check engine, right? Which is not good. That's not very informative
check
or
engine.
Insightful.
But you know what?
I think he disconnected it or something.
I appreciate the check engine light because it really is just, hey, take me to a specialist.
Yeah.
That's what it's saying.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's much like passing out for people.
If you just pass out to the hospital.
Yeah, if you just pass out.
Yes, you're right. Write that down. Passing out is the check engine light for people.
You taking that for? You can have that for a bit if you like.
No, that's so good. I will use it as a bit because I was watching something on some educational show this past weekend, and it was about the sinking of an aircraft carrier as an artificial reef off the coast of Florida. It was a fascinating
show. I love that
show.
They do that. That stuff's amazing.
Yeah, and There was a guy who was in there checking the hull or something like that, and he came up and he surfaced and he was unconscious. And they got him out of the water, and I don't remember exactly what
happened. That's bad news.
But that's a clear sign.
Something went wrong.
So if you're a scuba diver, you make the OK symbol, you know, the circle with your two fingers. And if you're far from the boat, you do the same thing with your arm touching your head. So it's like a big circle. And basically,
do you have to stick your other arm out like it's the rest of your fingers?
No,
to make
I don't
the
think
full,
you do. Sort of do that. If you do this, take your arm and you touch your fingers to the top of your head to make a big O for OK,
if you use the other hand too, is that check out?
That
the,
means
the ones on.
It's monkey shines. Or I don't know what that is. All I know is, and then you always ask, well, what's the symbol for not OK? And they go, anything else? If they look
that's
at
right,
you and they do an OK symbol and you don't give it back, they
right.
you know, the Zodiac
so
comes
if you're
to
like,
pick you up.
I'm fine, just waving, everything's cool. Can they do the finger pistols? They know that something's wrong.
No, they're very smart with regard to fail-safe mechanisms. Fail-safe is a really important design principle in engineering. If it fails, how does it fail? So, for example, you have all these security doors. And in the event that the power goes out or the building collapses,
do they unlock or lock? Right.
And a lot of people, well, we don't want people going in stealing the computer monitors. Let's lock them in when the fire starts.
Fail safe means it fails in a safe way.
Yeah.
It's not safe from failure.
Yeah. So if your explosive system fails, does it go off?
Right.
Hopefully it wouldn't. That would be fail safe. And sometimes the answer is not clear. You know, should the doors open or close? We don't know. You want to make them open so in case there's a carbon dioxide leak in the building.
But you want them locked so people can't just clip the power and then come and steal your stuff.
Yeah. No, that's exactly. So that's a conundrum. Can I use that word? Conundrum?
You can use that word if you can tell me why conundrum means what it means.
Oh, I don't know. But conundrum means like a puzzle, a riddle.
That's good. But where does it come from?
I have no idea. Will you, Captain Library, tell Captain Library here with the answer? Where does it come from? I would like to learn something.
I don't use the word conundrum because I don't know why.
Oh.
It's a conundrum.
I think I heard it on the David Letterman show and I use it. Because I like Dave. He's a funny guy.
Let's take this in for a landing. Because I actually think that the fail-safe thing.
Yeah.
You know, you said it's an engineering principle.
Right.
Right. There must be a way to point out to people that the engineering principles are important to know. It's important to know how should I
agree, even though you've said absolutely nothing.
I have said nothing.
To understand the scientific method and science and engineering principles allows you to ask intelligent questions and see whether or not this guy is BSing you or he really is helping you fix the
problem. Even more fundamentally, just having a knowledge, a basic knowledge of how things work around you keeps you from going insane.
Not everyone believes that, though.
You do because you
are a Renaissance man. You're curious. That is the operative word here, curious. We concluded that some people just aren't curious.
But even if you're not curious, don't you need... I mean, if you try to open a door and you can't open it, don't you have to at least understand that the principle is that this piece of wood turns on an axis that is on one side or the other? You know what I mean? Like, you have to have
Diagnose when the thing doesn't open.
So someone who's like, I don't care about engineering, I don't care about physics or science or anything, they're lying because they need to know how to open a door. They need to know, you know.
I stand corrected. I should have not used the phrase don't care. But you don't have to be passionate about it. So I'm passionate about science and engineering, right? But I'm still very curious about economics and opera and ballet
and how your car
rap
works.
Music and how my car works. But a lot of that is science and engineering. But with regard to fail safe, a really smart thing that scuba divers did is the international symbol for you're in distress is your diving mask up on your forehead, which is the natural thing. So if you come up and it's the first place you put your mask. You put it right up on your forehead. And if you do that, they always check, are you okay? And if you don't answer, they come out and get you because that's where you would naturally put it if you weren't thinking. So you actually have to think. So if you're ever on a dive boat, you see people with their masks turned around. They look like Robin Hood or something, and the back of the mask is in the front. And you're thinking, is this cool, like putting your baseball hat on backwards? But they do it because
they
know
that's
the
symbol. But they were in a place they could say, I'm not going to say I'm in trouble.
You know, and sometimes you just put it up there because it's comfortable, and then they ask you, oh, no, I'm not. And you either put it back on or you realize you were giving them that symbol. But that's a good fail safe, I think. So you're right. I stand corrected. It's not that you shouldn't care. You should care about all areas, all domains of knowledge.
We have conflated, and by we, I mean everybody. We've conflated not being passionate about science and math with not liking it.
Right. Or not caring about it.
Or not caring about it. So that now we can say, no, because I'm not passionate, I don't want to have anything to do with it. Whereas you have something to do with it all the time.
Right. Whereas I know artists who are fascinated about science and engineering, and they're really neat people to talk to, and they're like sponges.
I bet you
they're
scientists
you
who are
and I ask them
fascinated
questions
with
art
too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So my friend Chris, I was talking about, to me, a car is a vehicle to get me from one place to another. And let's face it, I like, you know, to be able to plug my MP3 player in, and I listen to books on tape, and I like a decent stereo, and I like all the amenities. But I don't really care what kind of car I drive, as long as it, you know, it's reasonably comfortable and gets good gas mileage.
What
my
kind
friend
of car
Chris,
do you like? Working.
Yeah. My friend Chris likes cars. He's a car guy. He really likes them. He races them on, like, Road Atlanta or places like that. And people make fun of him. Because he had this Lotus Esprit for a while. And it was the very low end.
Is that the James Bond car?
No, isn't his Austin Martin? No, he drives a BMW.
But there was a Lotus.
Aston Martin.
I think it was Spy Who Loved Me. There was a Lotus turned into a submarine.
Oh, I don't know. But this is the low-end Lotus. I don't want you to get the impression he's buying a $150,000 car.
Not the James Bond Lotus.
But he likes, and I'm sure those accessories would cost you a bundle. He likes to drive his car, and he has these funny little blue or purple racing shoes because the pedals are close together for these kinds of racing cars.
Wow.
And he goes out, and amateurs can go race on these tracks, and that's what he likes. And some people would say, well, that's a waste of time. But that's what he likes. He enjoys it. And he probably is fascinated by the physics of skidding in the turns and things like that. That's what he likes. If he enjoys that, he should do that. So he's passionate about that, but he has a basic understanding of you know, the things you should understand, right? You should understand a little bit about linguistics and culture and history. For if you do not, you are doomed to repeat it, right? History is an important thing. Yet we repeat it all the time. I don't get it.
Well, it's like Nietzsche said. That shit's going to happen over and over and over and over and over.
I've read very little Nietzsche. You're paraphrasing, aren't you?
I am.
So Nietzsche was German?
I hope so.
So that's what das Scheiße wird sehr oft passiert.
Übermensch.
No, that's a bad translation.
Eternal recurrence. That's the joke I'm making about Nietzsche.
But why do we get people that aren't interested in anything? So really it's a problem of just plain curiosity.
I don't like people who aren't curious about anything.
Yet I think this is a problem. We have a lot of people that aren't curious at all. And if I don't know something about something, then I will ask. And I've now gotten to the point where I am not uncomfortable going in and say, look, I don't understand much about this. How does this work? And have someone explain it to me. And you learn a lot. And you're right. With a basic understanding of logic and the scientific method and basic principles, you can work with them to figure out two things. One, what it is you want, what floor covering you want on your basement or something like that. And
are we working on the basement, Pete?
Well, we were. We put epoxy down because we have a lot of dogs, foster dogs. And it's the perfect thing. I mean, it looks like an industrial warehouse, but it's the perfect floor covering. And I know something about epoxy, but even then I learned a lot from the guys that I talked to. I think maybe it's ego that gets in the way. And I will say this, the best salespeople. There was a book called The Ultimate Sales Machine, and I'm trying to remember the author of it, and it will come to me shortly. And he said you should be an education marketer, that you should educate your client, your potential client.
Right, because if you say
the things they need and why your product fits the bill.
This is the best thing ever. Why? It's
just
the
best
thing
ever.
You can't not tell someone what the deal is. You can't just say what it is. You have to say why it is.
And
right?
This is the problem with politicians.
You know, I've been trying to get us to like an end spot for this, and you just keep coming up with new stuff.
It'll just keep going. We won't talk about politics.
Well, we can, but just we got to take a break so that I can drop in that theme music.
Okay. But we have come to a conclusion, and the conclusion is I'm wrong to say that, you know, some people just don't like science and engineering. What it should be is that it's okay to not be passionate about a number of subjects.
Yeah.
But you must at least be curious about them to learn a sufficient amount of information to operate in your daily life, to get your car fixed, to get your floors covered, and to be an informed, both an informed consumer, that's what that first thing, and an informed member of the electorate, that when people say things like, you know, we should leave it up to the states as to whether or not they want to ban birth control. What that says is you know nothing about sociology and, more importantly, economics. Notice I didn't even say biology or medicine. You know nothing about economics because if you're one of these people that's like, well, I don't like the high cost of healthcare, nothing is more expensive to the healthcare system than an unwanted pregnancy. Nothing. Right. I mean, we dealt with this in Wikonomics, so it's an economic issue.
Yeah.
And I'm just telling the truth. And, that, you know, my friend Martha Grover just had a baby, most adorable little girl. And you should see, I showed some pictures to my wife. Everybody likes babies. I love babies. But you have to be honest and say, when you're in a place in your life where that baby, you're not ready to take care of that baby, that's not a good thing. And if you actually accidentally have a boo-boo, well, think about adoption. That's how my son Dylan came to live with us. And as much as he drives me crazy sometimes, I don't regret it for a minute. He'll never believe me if he hears this. But
how did we get to public policy in three easy steps? It's okay to not be passionate about engineering and put a jacket.
Well, I'm just saying. If I use an example like, well, you should have voted for that super collider in Texas, which we cut from the budget, that might seem a bit obscure. So I pick something more relevant in Rick Santorum, who I don't think is a bad guy, but I disagree with him vehemently. I think people that believe in Rick Santorum's view on birth control, or even the religion in which I was raised, Catholicism, I think it's uninformed. I think it's ill-advised. And you can always invoke the moral thing, you know, that God did not want us to prevent the natural making of babies. They write it in Latin in the Vatican. It's a different thing.
Well, okay. Well, hold on a second.
Uh-oh. I know I'm in trouble now.
No. I'm not a religious guy.
And neither am I. I'm not a big fan of religion.
I don't follow the tenets of the church. But
you're a person of great faith, I sense. I have faith in a lot of things.
I'm not going that way on this one. I'm more saying, isn't there a reason that people are – isn't there a reason for someone to say we shouldn't provide birth control with health insurance? Isn't there a reason? And the reason just means that the outcomes that people want are different from the outcomes that other people want.
Yeah, it could be.
Right?
Oh, you think they're masking it in religion then?
I don't know if they're masking it in religion. I feel like everybody needs – some kind of unifying philosophy to get them through life.
We do.
You need something.
Whether
that,
you're religious or not.
Yeah.
You need a moral code.
You need something that, every man must
otherwise,
have a code.
You're an
and
a-hole.
Woman too.
Yeah.
And if your code is the Catholic Church, I have great respect for people who say it's not a buffet. You can't just pick and choose what you like.
Whereas many clergy call Americans who are in the Catholic Church cafeteria Catholics.
Is that what that's
exactly
buffet,
the term they use. Yeah.
I disagree with pretty much everything the Catholic Church has to say about how society should be run.
Okay.
But I kind of admire folks who say, look, this is how it's got to be done. You got to do it. This is what we follow. You can't say, oh, just because I'd like to not have too many children.
This is why I'm not Catholic anymore. But actually, the Catholic, Catholicism has some very interesting policies that I think are good. They're actually big believers in science, in the Big Bang Theory, in genetics, in evolution. They believe in evolution. They just don't believe in the – let me see if I can put this right – the unlawful spilling of the seed. That's why they don't like infertility treatment.
If people know that they should say, let it be state rights to define the contraception thing, and they know they're going to get what they want, maybe they have an intense understanding – of sociology.
Oh, yes. Yes, he does. So Rick Santorum does.
This is what I'm saying.
Rick Santorum is not a dumb guy.
He's gaming the system, right?
Yeah. He realized that some states are conservative and some states will follow his beliefs or whatever he wants people to do. Absolutely. Some states will.
Yeah.
I mean, look at what states do. I mean, they're very diverse.
They're crazy, states are.
But I just think that's wacky. And notice, we're not even talking about abortion, which is a much more controversial thing. We're talking
about contraception. I can't believe you even brought it up.
Well, because people get uncomfortable with that one. So that's what I'm saying. We're not talking about that. We're just talking about
if they can cancel a podcast, they're going to figure out how to cancel this one now that you've said the word abortion.
No, we're all about the truth, aren't we? It's okay. I don't think we're being what is it? Is it distasteful? We're not acting in poor taste, are we?
Bad faith.
We're not telling dead baby jokes or anything here.
Oh, and I know I comedians have a great that dead do that. Baby joke.
Right, and it's an acquired taste, the dead baby joke.
I do
right.
Like
we know you're only joking. Joke. That's why we said dead baby jokes. Nobody has dead baby policies. If they did, I'd be very worried. So Yeah, have we wrapped this up?
I don't think we've even remotely wrapped it up. We seem to have pulled the thread and
now the whole thing's unraveling. Yeah. But yeah, you have to understand certain basics of everything. And it's not just science and technology. It's culture, psychology, sociology, art, music.
Yeah, now this bothers me a little bit too, though, because now it sounds a little bit like Robert Heinlein saying that, you know, humans aren't ants. Specialization is for insects. You have to be a well-rounded person to know everything. But Heinlein was a weird, demented,
the science fiction
crypto fascist. Yeah.
Who wrote Stranger in a Strange Land?
Yeah,
I just read that book a few months ago. Brilliant. I love that book.
Yeah.
See, he's a crypto fascist. What is a crypto fascist?
He presents the idea that citizenship requires military service in Starship Troopers, right?
A lot of people believe that.
A lot of people do believe that.
I don't think it's such a bad idea.
But it's not true.
It's not true. It's true in many European countries.
It's true if you make the policy. But when people start saying, this is the way that I don't know how to argue against Heinlein. I'm not prepared.
I believe that citizenship requires you to give back to the commons. And whether that's the form of military service or in many European countries, when you're inducted in military service, you're not running around shooting people. You're doing public service work. And you're just part of the military because it's easier to put everyone in the same uniform to get them to, you know, right, to build the levy or things like that.
So Heinlein writes a lot of sexual libertines who are excellent hand-to-hand fighters with military experience, who are excellent pilots, who are dashing.
Yeah, and that's Starship James Troopers. Bondian, everyone's beautiful, right, in that. There's no ugly people in that whole movie. Did you notice
because
that?
Because true citizens who have gone through military service are beautiful, right? And that's
I don't agree with that.
That's the crypto fascism that I'm talking
about.
There's
room for us ugly people as well.
There's got to be. Here we are. We've found our room, you and I,
right,
for ugly.
And we are
for
trying
being ugly.
To do a community service.
If you tell a bunch of 17-year-olds that a true citizen has been in the military, mm-hmm, and knows how to apply violence to problems, I feel like you're going to get a whole host of problems
of Wolfowitz clones who are neocons.
That's what I'm talking about, crypto fascists. And, you know, please write me letters about this one. I would love to hear people say that I'm completely wrong about the Heinlein thing, you know, and what I should read. And because I'm going off of, I mean, the last time I read a Heinlein book was,
back in '05.
It might have been 15 years ago.
Okay.
But when I read Heinlein books, I read them all. You know?
Oh, okay.
Including that weird one, To Sail Beyond the Sunset, where everyone is sleeping with their brothers and sisters and husbands and daughters and
Stranger
wives.
Yeah, Stranger with a Strange Land is a little sexual promiscuity.
They're starting to get there. Well, Sail Beyond the Sunset, eventually, you know, our lead character, she hears her son and daughter having incestuous relations, so she takes off all her clothes so as not to be threatening and then sneaks in on them after they've, you know, finished and gets right in there in the bed to say, okay, here's why you can't be doing this, and talks about being turned on by being among, so
this... Right, but he's allowed to write that.
He's totally allowed to write it, but then when it's... in a science fiction novel, it doesn't get the kind of attention that it needs for people to say, hey, so this book about incest here, you know what I mean? Parents allow science fiction to slide.
Unless it has wizards and
if it has wizards, then it's like, demons.
Wizards.
Orcs and goblins. And
no, what was the Harry Potter objection? It's wizards and witches? Witches and wizards? Witches and warlocks?
Well, witches and warlocks is the classic formulation.
Okay, but in Harry Potter, it's witches and wizards. Do they call them witches? Witches sounds so... We have a bad connotation.
I haven't read a Harry Potter book in something like 10 years. No,
It's fiction fantasy, and people are upset that, well, we'll be unchristian if we read about wizards and... Ooh.
Is that your concern?
But it was a classic morality tale of good versus evil, wasn't it? And
Harry Potter?
Yeah. And good conquered.
Oh, I thought it was just like a reheated Roald Dahl with magic.
Can I get that with couscous? What is that? Reheated? Who's Roald Dahl?
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh.
guy who wrote Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and Danny Champion of the World and Fantastic Mr. Fox. The Harry Potter.
Oh, he wrote the Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
like the that. Harry Potter universe just feels like someone who, and I guess I'm talking about the author, J.K. Rowling, it just feels like she really loved those Roald Dahl stories, especially the ones about his boarding school experiences.
Okay.
And decided to make them a little bit less old English and male.
Okay.
And in doing so, also took out the kind of the interesting morality.
Oh. I thought there were some interesting moral choices.
I didn't get past the third book.
Okay.
Everybody tells me that the fourth book is when it starts actually getting interesting. But here's the thing. If it takes you three books to get interesting in a seven-book series, then your series only has four books in it.
Other people found it interesting by the first or second book, though. But that's okay. It's all personal taste. So the point is, you don't have to be passionate about everything, whether it's science, engineering, culture, opera, Roald Dahl books, Harry Potter, or
crypto-fascism.
But you have to at least have a minimal level of knowledge so that you can make informed decisions. And that is the public service that we're trying to provide here. That discussion. There it is in a nutshell. So even if it's not something you I mean, so pick some, name something you just hate, you're not interested in at all.
Duh. Veganism.
Okay. But basic understanding of nutrition and an understanding of the fact that if you were a vegan or if your wife was a vegan or your friends were vegans, that they would need to struggle to get protein and a complete protein and things like that. If you're a vegetarian, you have to eat a little bit different than someone who eats meat.
Yeah. And if you're a vegan, you also have to, you know, watch out for just filling up on certain starches.
Yeah, exactly. And how do you get calcium if you can't eat dairy and things like that? And there are ways of getting calcium.
Is that spinach?
It might be. Spinach has a lot of iron. I'm not sure.
Or chalk.
You need to know these things. Or maybe you take a vitamin supplement with calcium in it.
Eat your Tums so that you can digest.
Although I'm not a big fan of eating Tums because Tums is a base. It's there to neutralize acid. There might be other calcium salts that you – and the point is I don't know. But if I were converting to veganism, these would be things I would research. And people have researched these and you could read – you know, books, pamphlets, magazine articles. You could find something on the web probably in 30 minutes that would help you understand this, right?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But so, I hate veganism.
Why do you hate veganism?
Because it just tastes so bad.
Oh, that's okay. So it's a personal taste. I respect and admire my vegetarian friends.
One of my favorite spices is steak.
That's not a spice.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, you can flavor anything with steak.
Actually, the chemical people in the flavors and aroma industry do have meat flavors.
There you go. See? See, industry backs me up.
Right, but they can do it with esters and aldehydes, and you can eliminate the killing of the animal now.
I tell you, you give me a nice blue cheese salad with a few walnuts on it, and then you shave some steak on that, you know? That's a good salad.
I eat a lot of vegetarian meals. But I will admit that like twice a year, I like to go to Ruth Chris and get that sizzling filet mignon served in sizzling butter with some au gratin potatoes and some red wine. Oh, it's good. It's really good. But what's sad is you need to understand something about beef versus, say, chicken or fish protein. That beef protein, it's a little bit tougher. And when you cook it, you have to chew beef more than you do, say, fish. I eat a lot of seafood. Mm-hmm. I like seafood. And, you know, I get my omega-3 fats from a good salmon.
Well, that's like why that. You cut beef in particular ways. I mean, that's why you
should. Yeah, but I forgot that. I had not had beef in a while.
Did you cut with the grain and then you
I don't know what I did, but I.
You got to cut against the grain.
I got these fillets, these little petite fillets with these different sauces on them, and it just looked really good. And it was fabulous. It was great. That's what I'm saying. I'm not a vegetarian because every once in a while I want a good slab of beef prepared.
A lot of people talk about the taste of bacon being the thing that keeps them from being vegetarian.
I think it's – but what you like about bacon is the smoked flavor. I don't think it's necessarily the pork.
And the salt.
Yeah, yeah. So salt and smoke. But you can do that in textured vegetable protein. You can do that in turkey. So I eat turkey bacon, and I love turkey bacon because it's got that smoked flavor.
You remember the last time you mentioned turkey bacon on the podcast?
Did we have problems with turkey bacon?
Not
did this
problems
lead to
so
a
much,
kerfuffle?
I just suggested that you were sick in the head.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Turkey, it's lower in fat, but it's and actually, I've tried some of the vegetarian ones. They're not bad. There's a vegetarian pork sausage. What, do they call it bacon?
That's what I mean. Someone called it bacon to me once, and now that's why I always say it. I don't know if that's a brand name. It might be sausage also. I think that's a brand name.
They make some breakfast sausage. As long as they're spicy, that's what I like about a sausage.
As long as the textured protein is covered by a spice, you can... Why not spice it with steak?
I'm just saying some people don't... Anyway, some people can tell the difference, and they don't like it one bit, and they can't stand it. But still, you know, it's probably better for you. I mean, eating too much fat is probably going to... kill you eventually.
It's true. And I've been trying to eat less fat, you know, after becoming a father.
But you got to find what it is that you like. And so, for example, my mother makes this great coleslaw where she chops up bacon, fries it, and puts the bacon in the bacon fat and mixes it with vinegar and puts it on cabbage. And it is a great...
And that's how she makes her slaw?
Yeah, that's her slaw. And it's a great slaw. It tastes great. And I thought, I can't be making this bacon thing. I mean, I got a doctor's appointment in, you know, 6 months, and he'll double my statin, you know, prescription. But what I did is I take the fake bacon bits, like Bacos, which mm-hmm. are just vegetable protein flavored like bacon.
Yeah.
And I pour canola oil on them, and I make this slurry of bacon bits in canola oil, and I mix it with vinegar, and it's actually pretty good.
It's funny. It's actually really close. Sounds grosser when you just say that. Oh, you're it sounds really gross. Oil on.
And
the
here's what
bacon.
Happens is after a while, the red dye number whatever leaches out of the Baco bits, and they become like pink. And when you so a day or two later, when you keep it in the fridge and you pull it out, you get these pink, and then they get squishy, so they're not even crispy like they used to be. So they're squishy pink things. It looks as though you have developed a liking for the tang of human flesh. And that's what it looks like. And you're just like, oh my God, what is that, dog? You know, and no, it's so it doesn't look very pleasant, but you know, nothing's perfect. So give me a break. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
But yeah, so what we have come to a conclusion, and that is you don't have to be passionate about everything. You can be passionate about the things you're passionate about, but you need to have sufficient curiosity such that you can have a basic level of knowledge about most things. So you can make intelligent decisions.
You can interrogate
yeah.
the things that you come in contact with in your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's an ongoing process. So you will continuously learn when you need to about these things. And let's face it, if you go to the Consumer Reports website and look up reviews on the web and then go talk to an expert about whatever it is, getting your floors finished, getting your tree with pine borer beetles in it cut down, you will be more knowledgeable. And I do think ego gets in the way. I think people are like, well, I don't want to do anything that's outside my comfort zone that I don't know anything about. And this is why people don't ask their doctor enough questions, their dentist enough questions, their proctologist enough questions. This is a guy you should ask a lot of questions, yet people don't. I always make a lot of jokes. I just turned 50 last year. I'm going to have to go in for the colonoscopy. I will ask a lot of questions, but I will tell a lot of jokes too.
Just to try and get over the fact of what's actually happening.
Well, what's interesting, I learned something because my wife had one, is in order to get the scope in there and get a good picture, they puff you up with air.
No.
So, and this is a very funny thing, that when you leave, right, most doctors say, well, you can't leave until you can stand up and, you know, count to 10 or something. There's a test. There's a rubric of when you're sufficiently.
Is that just to get you to fart before
you leave? Yes. They say, well, once you pass gas, we can let you go. What other surgical procedure is that the metric that you have to fart before you leave?
Well, isn't there a big thing about you need to have a bowel movement before you can leave the hospital after a surgery? That's like the thing to make sure everything's working.
Maybe,
right.
and that's, you know, particularly if you have GI, mm-hmm. yes, that makes perfect sense. If you have gastrointestinal surgery, the way you know the system's working and is, you know, when the
here's a nice
the
way
roller coaster car exits the track. You know,
of yet again saying, well, here's our conclusion. There's a way to just hear, oh, you got to fart before you leave, or you got to take a shit before you leave the hospital, and just finding that hilarious and ridiculous.
I laughed at that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's totally fine to find it funny, but if you're just sniggering at it and thinking that it doesn't actually matter, mm-hmm. it's foolish. So I don't care why that's happening. Yeah. You could get yourself in trouble. Under very rigid conditions like post-op.
Yeah. How can you get yourself in trouble?
I'm saying that what if you did a home remedy of some kind that then said in it, you know, make sure that you have bowel movement before you, you know, do something. And you're like, crap, you know, and then ignore it.
Ah, yes.
You see what I mean?
So the point is, everyone should have – so this is a great example. Everyone should have a rudimentary understanding of the gastrointestinal system.
Yeah.
If you don't poop
something
for
wrong.
A while, right? And, you know, if it went, you know, a day or two, hopefully that's just a transient. But that means something's wrong. And then when you do, it's rectified itself. But that is a test.
Rectified.
Rectified. Yes, because – what is it? Trying to think. Ron Schock, the late Ron Schock, great comedian, was on Laughing. He tells a joke about the word asshole. He said, well, the reason people use that word to describe you when you're a bad driver on the highway is because it's the one word that you can make out very clearly, even when you can't hear them from behind a closed car window. He goes, try this, yell rectum, and they won't know what you're talking about. I thought that was really funny. No, but that's logic. That's logic, right? Do you know what this is? It's what chemical engineers would call a plug flow reactor. It's a sort of continuous system, and if things are going in at one end and they're not coming out at the other, that means something's wrong. And you should know what that means. What it means is a kinked bowel or a actually, if it had a perforation, you would see even much worse symptoms. But
you'd get very tired.
A kinked bowel
quickly.
Is just that. It's just kinked. It's a very simple thing. It can happen to humans. It happens very often to herbivores with long, windy GI tracts, like horses.
Do you kind of jump around to unkink that? What do you do? Do you shake?
A lot of times people wait, and if they can't wait, they do surgery. But it's a simple thing. It just gets kinked like a garden hose, and you can die. And if you don't fix it, you can die. So there's probably drugs they can give you to just loosen up everything in there. In fact, before you go in for your colonoscopy, there's just drugs that make it all go whoosh. And
like drinking a quart of prune juice and then waiting.
Yeah, and they make you drink like a half a gallon of this stuff. And the new stuff's a little better than the old stuff. The old stuff, the brand name was Go Lightly. And as my colleague, Professor Tannenbaum, who used to be on the faculty here, would say, it made you go very heavily. And you would get cramping.
Well, now that we've talked about poop, do you want to try to go in for one more, like a fifth conclusion to the...
No, I think that's it. I think we've just been offering examples. Whether it's auto mechanics or pooping, you need to understand basic things.
And you should have the respect for your fellow citizens to think that they should too.
Yeah, I think so.
Even if they think that math is hard or that science is boring.
Right. So I'm a geek and I happen to like music, but that's not my main thing. And I will say this, Wynton Marsalis, who is the director of the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, does a lot of speaking and appears on PBS things and talks about the value of music and why it's important. He gave a brilliant speech to the the Washington Correspondents, something like that. It's not the National Correspondents Dinner when they do that, when the president talks and they always have a comedian. But he just, you know, he talked about websites, about the history of jazz. He got me all excited. This was exciting stuff. And I believe that arts and music have an important role in our education, and those that want to defund them all are crazy. And if you don't believe that, you just have to listen to someone who is passionate about it, and that's Wynton Marsalis. And he'll convince you that even if, you know, I'm fighting to keep science and technology and math in the schools, you understand that what the point he makes is a valid one too.
Did you listen to any jazz since you heard him talk about it?
Actually, since I heard him talk about that, I saw him direct the Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra here in Atlanta.
Did you feel like you understood it a little better? Did you have a more full experience?
Maybe, but jazz is, so I play jazz trumpet, so
you were already there.
I was already there, but I think someone who's not there would listen to this guy and say, now I see why, you know, maybe it shouldn't be all the subjects, but to get rid of art, and in his case, music, it's a bad thing for humanity. It really is. It's a bad thing. I think and the studies have shown this, that most people who play an instrument tend to be reasonably intelligent. And in school, they tend to do better in school. Did you play a musical instrument?
I did, a couple.
Oh, what do you play?
I can sort of do guitar.
Okay.
Played bass in high school band.
Okay. And I mean, was that a positive experience for you?
A little bit of piano. Yeah. It was very positive, actually.
Yeah, but I think even understanding something about music theory and tempo and rhythm and the frequencies of notes, you know, helps me understand, you know, physics and chemistry better. It's a good thing. So.
Well, that's a whimper, not a bang.
Can we go out with a whimper?
Yeah, sure.
Sounds good to me. We're nerds. We're allowed to do that. We're not. If we were Kanye West, we'd grab the microphone and start ranting.
And say, you know, I'm going to let you finish your podcast, but listen, WTF by Marc Maron is the best of all time. Consilience with Pete and Charlie is a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
Recorded at the WREK Studios on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology in Atlanta, Georgia.
What's that legal thing we have to do?
I think it's called a disclaimer.
Yeah, they don't care or want to know what we do here.